my family is not a climbing family, and I'm in Belgium, so it's not a climbing country. I arrived to a point I had to stop physical preparation because it was not good for my climbing, because I take a lot of muscle and quite fast. If you have more muscle, it won't be so feminine, so maybe calm down. I already heard that.
Welcome to another episode of the That's Not Real Climbing podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, and I'm excited to introduce my guest, Chloe Collier. Chloe is a boulder and lead climber competing in the World Cup circuit for the Belgian team. This is my first time talking to a Belgian climber, so in this episode, we'll learn a lot about their fairly newly established national team and how funding works. And we also talk about body image with being a more muscular climber, as well as the difficulties that come with being a female climber. Hope you enjoy this episode with Chloe. Okay, great. Well, yeah, how are you doing today? Are you preparing to travel to China for the first World Cups of the season?
Yeah, today I'm resting and I will train Wednesday still in Europe, and then I will travel on Friday. So yeah, I leave soon and I feel ready for China.
Yeah. Have you been there before?
Yeah, I've been in China several times because there was a lot of bouldering World Cups before in China. Several times in Chongqing. I've already been in Shanghai, Wujiang, a lot of places.
Okay, exciting. I'm also going to be in China soon just for like unrelated family travel, but it actually really stresses me out going there just because it's so locked down with like apps and everything that you're allowed to use. So yeah, I hope it turns out okay for you. It's really stressful for me.
It's quite different. You cannot use all the internet stuff like in Europe or in the US. But because I'm used to go, I think I have my habits and I know how to deal with it. So it's okay.
Yeah, I guess you probably know better than me. I haven't been in 10, 15 years, so
You have to find a good VPN. If you have the good VPN, it's good.
See, what I'm worried about is the map apps don't work, and then I can't read Chinese very well.
Yeah, you really have to use a map in advance. For example, for me, I use it in the hotel before I go out, so I'm sure that I'm not lost during the way.
Yeah, it's stressful. But how do you feel in general for the upcoming season? Are you excited, nervous for it to start?
Yeah, I'm quite excited and I feel also in shape, so I really want to climb at my level and just enjoy competing. Yeah, I did some simulation with other teams lately and it went well. So if I can climb like this training camps, it will be good.
Yeah, who are you training with?
We had two or three training camps with other teams. So it was the Belgian team with, for example, the Slovenia, the Austrian and the German teams. So we did both bouldering and combined simulations. So it was a lot of OQS athletes who were there and some of the boulders specialists. So it was very interesting because, yeah, it's good teams. So it's also good to see where you are before the season starts. And it can give you confidence if you are in good shape. So it's good before the World Cup that you know where you are and what to expect.
Have you ever gone into these training camps and then realized that you're feeling much worse than you thought you were?
Yeah. I already had this experience last year, to be honest. Last year wasn't so good already during the simulation, but I was still believing in myself that I could change things during the next sessions and to improve. But yeah, then finally, I was not improving, and the competition season didn't go so well. But since then I made a lot of changes, so it's different.
Okay. Yeah, that must be really stressful.
Yeah.
If like I can't imagine going into it seeing all how strong everyone else is and then realizing that you're not where you should be.
Yeah.
I feel like I kind of experienced that recently, climbing in a competition where I was like just warming up and everyone else was way stronger than me. And already going into the competition, I was in a bad like mental state because I was like, even during my warm up, I can tell that everyone is way better. And that's really stressful.
But it's also a part of competition. And I would say that there is no rule. Because sometimes you are pretty bad at the warming up, and then you do the best comp of your life. So it's also important to not to stress too much about the warming up or how you feel in the beginning of the session, because sometimes with the adrenaline of the comp or the mental game, you can really change your climbing when you are on the first boulder, and then it goes well. Sometimes it's also the opposite. You feel so strong in the warm-up zone, and then you do your worst comp. So it's not always a link between the last sessions and the warm-up and the competitions. Yeah, you also need to believe in you until the last minute.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. But yeah, I'm glad you're feeling strong after the simulation, and hopefully things will go well.
Thanks.
Yeah. How did you, for those who don't know, how did you get started climbing and when did you start competing?
Yeah, for me, it was, I started randomly, I would say, because my parents are not climbers. My family is not a climbing family. And I'm in Belgium, so it's not a climbing country. We don't have mountains, we don't have a lot of cliffs. So it was basically an opening day at the gym. So it was for free, you could climb for free. And it was close to my house. So my parents saw the advertising that we can climb for free that day. So they were like, okay, we can try with the kids. It's a good activity for the weekend. So I went there with my parents and my brother. And it was my brother and I who climbed. And I really liked it. Like from the first route, I wanted to go to the top. And then I wanted to try every route of the gym. And I didn't want to stop. My parents had to pull me out of the gym. I just asked them to be registered to a club and to start it every week. So that's what they did. And since then, I never stopped.
How old were you?
I am 27.
Or when you started?
When I started, I'm 27 and I started around 8 years old, I think.
Okay. And when did you start competing? Was it as soon as you signed up for the club you started competing?
I think it was like 2 or 3 years after.
Mm.
So around 11 years old, 11 or 12.
And was that like local competitions or did you, I guess, already start doing international competitions?
I think my two first comps were a kids competition, like local comp. And then I fastly went to national competition, but also because in Belgium, we didn't have a lot of regional or intermediate level. So it was or really easy comp or national.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess, did your brother also end up climbing or did he not like it as much?
From the first time, he didn't continue. But then he climbed later, like when I was already in the team. So I think it was, maybe 5 or 7 years later, just like this, but not competing or not expecting any results. It was just for fun. He's better at tennis.
Oh, okay.
It's a good tennis player. So.
Does he like compete in tennis? Is like competition running in your family?
Yeah, he competed in tennis and he was apparently he was very talented in a lot of sports, like football and tennis. So with balls, he's very good. But he's not a competitor like me.
Okay.
He's nice. Not really interested by competitions. I think he's even more talented than me in sports in general. But it's just that he don't want to compete. And I am a real competitor. So from being a kid, I remember also at school, I wanted to be the best in the sport class and always. So.
Yeah, I can relate with that. So your experience doing youth competitions, how do you feel like that compares to doing elite competitions and how is that transition?
For me, the transitions was quite good. Because I remember I did the World Cup finals just after I was in the first year of in the senior categories.
Oh, wow.
So the transition was good. But the difference was, I would say, mainly the style. It's way more powerful in the senior, for sure. And also, like, the fields, because there is more people, so you cannot do mistake. I mean, less mistakes than in the youth, because in the youth, we are less climbers. And also the level was, I think, a lot of difference between the athletes. So, for example, you had the finalists and then there was a big gap between the others. But in World Cups, it's like everyone is very close to each other in terms of level. At least in the top 30, we can do, I think, everyone can do finals in terms of flavor, but it's more about the strategy, the mental game.
So then do a lot of youth competitors end up dropping out before they reach the senior circuit?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that we should take in consideration because you also change, your body can change and maybe your goals in life can change. As well, because I know a lot of climbers who stop for the study, for university, things like that.
And then I was looking through your competition history. You've done boulder, lead, and speed competitions. It seems like bouldering is your favorite, but is bouldering your favorite?
Yeah, I would say yes. The story is that I started with lead. Climbing because in Belgium there was no bouldering teams or groups. It was mainly lead clubs. So I was very good in lead. Also in the European Youth Cups, I did finals. I made podiums. And then I discovered bouldering because the first European Cups, bouldering European Cups started, and I tried, and it felt that I was even more good, I think, because my body is better for the strength sport, effort, shorter effort, and I'm more strong than endurance. So bouldering came like naturally for me because I never trained it before my first European Cups, Youth Cups. So one moment I just chose because with school and everything, it was better to be specialized in one discipline. And it paid off, so it was a good choice, in my opinion. Then climbing became an Olympian sport, and it was combined with the three disciplines. So it was a new challenge for me because I never speed climbed before. And we didn't have the speed wall in Belgium. So it was a big challenge to train it and to start from nowhere. So that's why I started to do lead again and to start speed climbing. Then as soon as the first Olympics finished, I stopped speed climbing because I don't like it so much.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was mainly for the Olympics. And the next Olympics, it's about lead and bouldering, so I'm still doing both. I like lead a lot. I still prefer bouldering, but both are very good. I really liked these disciplines.
I guess I thought if you were like a more powerful climber, you might like doing speed as well.
But yeah, I don't know. One guy, one specialist told me I am good for my experience I had at that time. And I have a good body type for it. But yeah, it's just always the same, repeating the same movements. And what I like about climbing is the variety, that every session you can try different moves, you can learn something every day. So yeah, speed is not my thing, but I liked it. Like, it was good to learn a new sport and to improve, because you see your times getting better and better. So it's quite satisfying. But I think at one point, when you are fighting just for small details and always doing the same, I don't like it so much.
Yeah, you kind of hit like a plateau and then you're just shaving off like 0.1 seconds at a time.
But it's also fun to watch, so yeah.
So you said that there was no speed wall in Belgium. Is there still no speed wall there? Or like, where did you go to train?
So now we have. It's also a matter of time, because as the government supported Olympic sports, they wanted to provide speed walls. But it just took time, and it's, I think, always the same with administration and everything like this, that it takes more time than the time we had at that time. So I think we had the first speed wall very close to the qualifying event. So before that, I was going to Holland, the Netherlands, or Germany to train it. So it was a lot of travel. Because for me, Germany, it's 2 hours by car, and so to go, and then 2 hours to go back. And Netherlands, it's 1 hour and a half. So if I wanted to do double session a day, for example, bouldering and speed, I had to move a lot. It was very tiring.
Yeah, I guess I can see why that would make you not want to do speed more than you have to. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, I guess we can get into the Belgian team, because you're the first person from Belgium that I've talked to on this podcast.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that initially there was no Belgian team. So what was training like without having a national team?
Yeah, it changed a lot. The first years there was a team, but it was only in elite comps. There was no team for the bouldering comps, because as I told you earlier, there was no bouldering. The bouldering discipline didn't really exist in Belgium. Like, it was not considered like a real discipline. It was more like you train a bit on a bouldering wall for lead, but you don't train for bouldering comp. So yeah, when I was doing lead comps, we had a team, but it was really not organized as it is now. It was one coach for all the group, and the coach was not, I mean, he was doing his best, but he was not very experienced and didn't know a lot about the high level, the sport elite habits that we had to do, how to warm up, how to read the routes, everything. So it was a bit like a parent. And for bouldering comps, I went with my dad. And my dad is not a climber, but he's someone very organized and structured. So it helped me to have this structure. And for climbing, I was quite alone, just learning by myself. I also had my personal coach in Belgium. So we tried to improve after every comp. Like, I filmed everything so he could watch it and we could learn some things. And between comps, we really work on what we saw on videos. And I could really see the progress over the years. I think it was just slower than if I had a real team or a real structure. But at that time, I think there was a lot of countries in the similar situation. And yeah, with the years, we built a team. And because, for example, the first World Cup I did, I was alone in bouldering. So it was one coach and me. And now we have a real team. We have three men, two or three women sometimes. Depends if it's in China. I'm still the only woman to go now, for example, next week. But when it will be in Europe, we can have three women, for example. And we have also a physio. We have training camps in Belgium. We have a national world train, national center. So it's a lot of changes from the past and from what I knew at that time.
Yeah, you said that your dad was your coach for a while. Did he have any like sports background or like strength training background or anything?
I don't know the name in English. I will check.
What is it called in French?
Billard. I can show you a picture.
Sure.
Do you see something?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess like pool or billiards.
So he was European champion in pool.
Huh.
So he was competitive, but it was not physical sport. So it's different. It's quite different. But at least he had the competitive way and the structure. So it helped me. On some points, it helped me a lot. And at some points, it was also hard to be with your dad. Sometimes it's not the same. You get annoyed by him or bored and you're like, oh, shut up. Don't tell me that at that moment. I'm already stressed or something. Because he wants to do your best, so he's pushing a lot. And sometimes it's too much.
And I mean, I guess pool is quite different from climbing. So did you ever feel like he wasn't qualified to be giving you advice?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I didn't know that there were like competitions for pool either. That's interesting. Do you ever miss like training before there was a whole team, or is it always just much better training with a team in place?
Sometimes it was also hard to be with a team. I think especially in the transition period, because I was the more experienced for a while. So I was the one who pulled everyone, you know? So I couldn't really take the advantage from the others, learn from the others, at least in the first years. And then it changed a bit. Like now we have very good men's athletes. And so when I train with them, they're really pulling me and it's good. But also it's men's. So it's not the same that if I train with women of my level, it's way better because it's, I mean, sometimes when a man does a movement and you are not sure you can do it, you will say, yeah, but it's a guy, so it's okay if I don't do the moves. And then you see another woman who do it and you are like, okay, I have to do it now, no excuses.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, it can be good and it's also bad sometimes, but especially because we don't have other very strong women at the moment for the bouldering team. I am really the strongest, so, and from far, so I don't learn from other women and I'm always pulling the others. It's good for the country, but for me personally, it's sometimes hard not to learn so much during the training camps. But yeah, with the years, we also improved the quality of the training camps. For example, this year we went to Slovenia. So in Slovenia, in Germany, and they have a lot of strong women. So it was good for me. It was one of the best preparation I could have because I could train with top three World Cups athletes and it was good.
Do you still find yourself, when you're training with men, you kind of feel like you don't have to be able to do the move because like they're men and then you're like a woman, so it's like different? Or do you try to be able to compete with them as well?
I would say in my personality, I'm the woman who wants to beat the guys as well. I mean, for me, the sex doesn't make any differences. The way I complain more is about the hate, because sometimes the distance, for example, if you work on big coordinations or big jumps with men, it's quite hard to compare if they are taller than you. For me, it's hard to say if it's because they are taller or it's because I don't do it well or I don't push enough. And for example, last year, I could train a little bit with Brooke Rabuteau in Paris at the beginning of the year. She's very small and smaller than me. So sometimes I tried the jump and I was like, wow, it's far. I'm not sure I can do it. And then she did it. So I was like, okay, I can do it. And then I tried again. But I think if it was a man, maybe I should have stopped before trying more. So it was good to see someone else from my size or smaller doing it. Yeah. So it's more about the distances than the sex, I would say.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I've also experienced something similar where I see someone do a move and lots of times I can just be like, oh, well, they could do it because they're like stronger than me and I'm like kind of weak. But if I see someone who I know is less strong than me do a move, then it kind of like lights a fire under my ass. And I'm like, I know I should be able to do this move. Like I am stronger than this person.
So you're also a competitor.
Not at a serious level, trying to be, but I'm really weak. Yeah, the mindset is there, but the body is weak. So I know that some countries don't get to train as a team because the country is too big. Like, for example, in the US, a lot of people are kind of spread out, and we try to have like a training center in Salt Lake now that brings a lot of people together. But I don't think everyone gets to train together all the time. Belgium is a bit smaller. So do you guys train together on a regular basis?
We don't have like a day, a week, something like this. It's more that we receive the calendar of the next month. And so, for example, we have a simulation on the beginning of the month and then a training camp after work in the end of the month, something like this. But it's not always the same days or the same dates. It changes every month, and we receive the email from the national coach the month before, so we can organize it. But it's new from last year. Before it, we had less training camps, and before we didn't have training camps because we didn't have the training center. So sometimes it's also a small country, so we know everyone. Like the national teams, it's mainly friends from long time. It's always the same people. Like we don't have a lot of new people. It's not coming like 10 new people per year. It's maybe one new people every 2 or 3 years. So as we are friends and we are all from the same city or around, we also meet each other at the gyms, at the commercial gyms. I mean, for like when you personally train, you meet the others and we can climb together. So it's a mix of personal training together and training camps like officially organized by the federation. Yeah, especially from 2 years ago now, we have a very good one in Brussels, so in the capital city. It's called Le Camp de Base, so it means the base camp in English. There is a Master of Fire competition over there. I don't know if you watched it Tomoa was competing there last year.
I don't think I saw it, but yeah, I'll look
into
that.
If you didn't watch, you can watch on YouTube. It's a very good competition.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put the link in the description.
It's like the Studio Block Masters or something like this. It's like not an official World Cup, but it was with a lot of World Cup climbers. And so we train in this gym, which is very good for hard boulders. They have a lot of hard boulders and good root setters. So it's very good.
Yeah, that's good. I think it's surprising to hear that there's a commercial gym that sets boulders that are hard enough for World Cup climbers. I feel like I've always heard that World Cup climbers can't climb in commercial gyms just because they don't set anything that's hard enough. So yeah, it's surprising to hear that.
I think it's true in a lot of countries, but it's not the case in France or in Belgium. I mean, in Belgium, it's from 2 years ago because before this gym didn't exist. But I train a lot in France because it's close to Belgium. I only drive 2 or 3 hours, so I can go for the weekend or for a week. And in every commercial gyms, you can find hard boulders in Paris. Maybe not far from Paris, but in the capital city, you have a lot. So it's good. Paris, I think it's one of the best cities to train for World Cups.
And in terms of funding and support that you get as an athlete, I know some countries, they get like support from the government for like being in, you're like technically part of the army or something like that. Is it similar in Belgium or no?
Yeah, it also evolved with years, but no, I have a salary from the government to be not a military, it's not a military salary. It's a very sport elite for the Olympic project. So until I am in the Olympic project, I have a salary to do my sport. So it's very comfortable for me.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, so you don't have to do any, like, you don't have to, I guess, divert your focus doing other, like, commercial setting or anything like that.
Yeah. The question, if I didn't have that salary, the question would be, what do I do next to training? I can give course or I can root set, but it's also tiring and it takes time. So it's complicated to combine. But I know a lot of World Cup climbers have to do it.
But you said it only started 2 years ago where they started doing the government salary?
This salary was from the first Olympic year, but it was also for the preparation of the Olympics, so it was before 2020. I think it was 2018 when it started, but at that time it was a half-time salary. Then I had better results, so I could have the full-time. But it can change every year, considering your results. So they evaluate you every year, and you can also lose it in 1 year, so it's not very sure for your long-term future, but for the moment, for the Olympic project, it's very good to have that salary and the support from the government.
Yeah, that's good to hear. There's a lot of people out there who are struggling with that. So yeah, it's good to know that you have some security.
Yeah.
But okay, yeah. Switching gears a bit into, I guess, like, body image related things. You have one of the more muscular builds of the female World Cup competitors, and you mentioned that you're very proud of it, which is good. Do you feel like being more muscular just came naturally to you, or did you work specifically to get bigger? Please excuse this brief intermission, but I would just like to remind you that if you are enjoying this podcast, please follow and rate it on your preferred listening platform. If you're watching on YouTube, I would love to hear your discussion and thoughts in the comments below. Anything helps to push this podcast out to more people and get even more amazing guests on. Back to the show.
No, it was quite natural. I know that because when I saw the pictures of me when I was a kid, I was already muscular without climbing, because I was not climbing before 8 or 9 years old. And before that, I was already with quite big shoulders and, I mean, muscular arms. So I think it's in my genetics. And I also, I mean, as a lot of climbers, I guess I trained the physical part, the fitness gyms, and for the first years of international competitions. But then I also noticed that if I do too much, I take weight and it's not so good for climbing, and I also climb with too much strength. And sometimes it doesn't help you at World Cups, because you have to find the easiest way to climb a boulder, to find better with techniques and using your, for example, your inner hooks or two hooks, and not doing everything in your arms. So my coaches also didn't want that I do fitness anymore. I arrived to a point I had to stop. I mean, it's not stop, but I did less physical preparation because it was not good for my climbing.
Really?
Also because I take a lot of muscle and quite fast. I still train the physical part, but more, I think, in a smarter way. I do more specific exercises, and I also work with bands more than weights, elastic bands, things like that.
Interesting. So you had to stop because even like, well, I didn't think that your arms could ever be like too strong for climbing. You know?
Yeah. But it's not really that I was too strong, but because I think climbers can have a lot of strength, but also can climb without using it, or, you know, it's more about switching. Like, sometimes it's good to go strong for a move, but then you have to use your hips or your technique, something like this. And for me, I mean, it's specific to me, so I don't want to generalize this topic, but for me, it happened that at World Cups, I was missing boulders because I was not putting a heel, because I was doing everything in the compression way or in the arms. And yeah, for me, it felt impossible to do the move. And then when I went out of the isolation, the coaches showed me videos of other women, which are also very strong, but they could switch from a compression move to the hips move. Mm-hmm. And to really climb more smoothly, more technically, this part of the boulder. Mm-hmm. And so they could do the boulder. And me, I was climbing with too much strength in every move. And I think climbing is always changing your rhythm, your intensity. So it was more about that. It's more about me that I cannot use my strength in the proper way. We just did less strength so I could use more my technical abilities. I don't know if it's clear. It's quite specific to me, but
oh yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, I guess I was always under the impression that you always could get stronger and that you should always try to get stronger. Yeah. But it's interesting to hear that maybe not.
I think it's true that if you just want to measure your strength, the finger strength, the arm strength, you can always improve, but depends of what you need, especially for competitions. I think outdoor, I could take more strength and it will help me. I can work the boulder, so I have time. But at World Cup, you have 5 minutes for boulder. And if you do wrong beta because you have too much strength or you don't feel the good movement because of your strength, it's bad. But I think it's not the case of every climber. I think some climbers have a lot of strength and can climb with it properly.
So you think maybe your weakness is like reading beta?
I think it's not reading, but it's more feeling when I am climbing at competition. Because my reading is often very good from the ground. But when I am in the boulder, my ability to feel and to adapt on the moment can be bad. Depends also of the stress and how I train, but yeah.
Interesting to know. Yeah, going back to body image, did you always feel confident about the way that you looked and like your build?
Yeah, I think for me, it never been a big problem to be muscular. Even when I was a kid or a teenager, I saw a lot of other girls struggling with that because they saw that their shoulders became more muscular or something, and it was hard for them to assume it as a woman. For me, it was not a problem because I knew it was my strength. I knew it was a tool for me to climb good. So I was quite proud of it. And yeah, at least in the climbing gym, it's really okay for me. Sometimes it's harder when I am in a, I don't know, in a metro and I see people looking at me because I have big arms.
Oh, does that happen to you?
Yeah, yeah. Also, in a restaurant or something, if I have a top or something where you see my arms, sometimes I see people looking at me. Yeah, it's not cool. But I think for everyone, you don't like to be looked at long. Yeah, for me, it's not polite.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to do that.
Yeah, I think I have a, well, not as similar of an experience, but since I, when I grew up, I never did any exercise. So I'm used to looking like a certain way. And I didn't start climbing until I was like 20 years old. So since I never grew up doing any exercise, I'm like not used to seeing my arms or my back being big. And I'm like not used to the way I look wearing like a strappy top. So it does kind of make me a little bit uncomfortable, even though I'm like not that like bulky yet. But yeah, it makes sense. Like I accept it because it allows me to do the moves that I want to do. But yeah, it definitely, I think sometimes it like looks out of place.
Yeah, I think I was also lucky. I was thinking about it when you were talking, and I just remember that my parents were also proud of that. Like, I mean, they were really helping me to be proud of that. Like, my father was always saying, yeah, Chloe, she has strong muscles and it's good. I mean, I think I already met climbers which have non-climbers parents, and they were like, yeah, but only if you have more muscle, it won't be so feminine, so maybe calm down. I already heard that, and my parents were not like this at all. They were really proud of me and supporting me for my choices. So if it was good for my climbing goals, they were supporting me. So I think it's also helped me to be confident about that.
Wow. Yeah, it would be really hard if I think, like my parents said, that it looked bad. I think that would be pretty painful to hear. Was it like other World Cup climbers or just like people that were in the gym?
At that time, it was more when I was doing youth comps. So it was international competitors. It was Belgian competitors in the national team, but it was in the youth comps.
Yeah.
So well, they didn't continue at World Cup level. But yeah, they were still the best in our country at that time for their age. It's quite sad.
Yeah, that's a shame to hear. Jeez.
Yeah.
But it's good that your parents were supportive of it. And I'm sure that helped with your confidence as well. But okay. Yeah, moving on to you being, I guess, one of the only women on the Belgian team. So I think earlier you mentioned that there are a couple of other women on the Belgian team now who will be participating in the European.
For a long time, I was the only woman in the bouldering team. In lead, we always had good climbers because we had Muriel Sarkany, we had Anneke Verhoeven, Spain. So several climbers who made podium and also won World Cups in lead, but in bouldering, we didn't have so much. We had another Chloe. It was Chloe Graftio. She also won the World Cups, bouldering World Cups. I think it was in 2009, something like this. But I was not in the team at that time. I was too young. So when I started World Cups, I was the only woman in bouldering. And now we have two other women, but for example, for this year, they are not selected for the World Cups because they are not strong enough. They are only selected for the European Cups. But they could go at World Cups only if they get good results at European Cups. So you can be selected in the season, during the season. Yeah, for the moment, I am the only woman in the bouldering team.
I think also one of the Discord questions was about this. Would you prefer to have more female high-level Belgian competitors, or do you like being like the dominant female competitor in the country?
Yeah, I have an ego of a competitor, so it's good to be the best. Of course, it's like for the ego, it's nice, but considering the problem to train, as I told you before, that I train only with men for years, I think it would be better to have other strong women. It would push everyone better and higher. I think I could improve faster with other women as well. So yeah, I think in conclusion, it would be better to have other strong women. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for sure, it's like, it's about 10 years I am the best in Belgium, and it's also good, but it doesn't help me to improve mm-hmm. faster.
So it kind of allows you to win money in competitions when you're in Belgium, but then at the World Cups, it gets a little bit difficult for you.
Yeah, there are positive aspects and negative ones. And yeah, when I am in my country, I can win the competition, I can win money, I can win the salary because of that. But when I am at World Cups and I see other teams with a lot of strong women, I see that the results can be better because of that.
Yeah, do you ever feel, I guess because of that, do you ever feel intimidated when you're competing at World Cups with other really strong women?
I started World Cup when I was very young. I was 15 years old. So at the beginning, I was climbing against my idols. So I was impressed. So that time I was climbing against Anna Stor, Akio Noguchi, Julianne Wu. And they were the women I was watching at TV. So yeah, at that time I was really impressed. But then when I get good results and then the women of my age came, I think I was on the same statues from my view, but it also depends of the time of my life. I think some period I was less confident and I could be impressed by the others. Sometimes I felt very confident and I felt the best and I was not afraid of anyone. So yeah, it also depends on my mood. But in general, no, we know a lot of climbers at World Cups. Like, I compete at World Cups for more than 10 years, I think. So I know everyone, almost everyone. So it's more like friends or people I'm used to see every year. So I think I'm not afraid anymore. It's really like an environment that you know. It's less terrifying than a new environment or something you don't know.
And you also mentioned that you got to train with Stasha recently and you really enjoyed that experience. What do you feel like? I mean, she's also like a really like muscular, strong female competitor. So what was your experience training with her?
Yeah, it was really good. It's funny because we know each other for a long time. We have just 1 or 2 years difference. So we competed at youth competitions against each other. So we know each other for a very long time, and I think we always appreciated each other, but we never spent time together really. It was just competing, and it's funny because we are quite similar in terms of situation. Like, she's the only woman, she's with her parents. I was with my dad before the team started, and still now I am the only woman in the Belgian team. So sometimes I can feel a bit alone. Yeah, I think she feels the same. And she's also training with a German team. I train a lot with French team because it's close to my country. So we have a lot of common points. Also because we are muscular and we are quite in the same style of climbing. So I don't know, we had this idea at the end of last year because we were invited in a duo comp and we were in the same team in Paris. And it worked very well. Like, the personality matched, the climbing abilities also were complementary, even if we are in the same style, but for some details we were complementary. And we really had fun at this comp. So we said to each other, okay, we should train together sometimes, so it could be nice. So we discussed it after the season, and Stasha came to Paris 2 times 1 week because I was training in Paris at that moment. And it was very good because for me, I'm not used to climb with other women at training sessions. So it was very good to see that I can do things she can do, or that she can push me, I can push her. It was really give and take. And also the personality matched, so it's very good. Like, we became more friends than before.
Yeah, hoping to train more with her in the future.
Yeah, I think we will do it because so we organized this weeks in Paris, but we also met at the simulations in Germany, in Slovenia. So actually we train more than 2 weeks together. We train more like 3 or 4 weeks this preseason. So yeah. And we said to each other that we are motivated to keep going. We will do other sessions together for sure. And I think it's also good to have a friend with me at the OQS or at the World Cups. It's always good. And I think also for her, because she's also always traveling with her parents. And I think it's good to have a friend next to it.
It's a shame that it took so long for that to finally happen, but it's good that you guys are finally training together. What was, you mentioned like the team boulder competition that you did. I forget what it was called, but what was your strategy for that competition? Because it's not often that you do like a team competition.
Yeah. So the qualification, it was about 15 boulders in a row. Like, it was in a rounding gym. So it started from the easier one to the hardest one. And we had, I think, 5 minutes per boulder with no rest. So it was really in a row. But as we are two, you can do, for example, I can do the first boulder, she can do the second one, I can do the third, etc. So we just observed in advance, okay, which boulders are our style. And so we could decide which climber will climb this boulder. So we decided according to the style and also to the height, because Stasha, it's a bit taller than me. So if it was a big jump or richy move, she would go. And if it was a small box, I would go because she hates that. And I'm very good at small boxes. So we mainly choose with the height and the distances. But also we were open to adapt For example, at one moment, Stasha was in a slab. She was supposed to climb a slab, but she couldn't start finally. So I just made one try and I could start. And so I keep continue to climb and it works. So yeah, we had a initial plan and we also modify, depends on what happened at that moment. And in finals, it was quite the same. It was also 5 minutes per boulder. And yeah, we couldn't read it in advance. So we had to decide in the 5 minutes. But as we already did this in the qualification, we just follow the same logic with the height, the distance. And if we couldn't, for example, do the first move, we just tried both. We see which climbers is going the highest.
Yeah, did you like that format? Do you want to do it again?
Yeah, it was very fun. It was very good. I think also I liked it because I was with Stasha, because I told you we really matched and we didn't have disagreement or something negative. It was only fun and the strategy worked, so we won the comp. So
yeah.
We enjoyed it.
Congrats. Yeah, I'll link that competition as well for people to watch if they haven't seen it, so they can keep up.
I think it can be frustrating to be in a duo, at least for me, as I'm used to climb alone and it's individual sport. Sometimes if the other is struggling, it's super hard for me to watch or to stay calm. But Stasha is very good, so she was not struggling so much, and I was not neither, so it was really comfortable. It could be different if the other one is struggling and you have to do everything or you have to push her. But yeah, it didn't go like this. So.
Yeah, that's good. I was thinking about like team sports, because the thought of doing team sports like volleyball or football or anything like that would really stress me out, because I don't want to be like a burden to my team. So yeah. I don't know how I would feel about doing like a team or partner competition. I think that would be too stressful.
Yeah, it's really like this. You don't want to disappoint the others, and you don't want that the other it's a weight. Yeah. It's in both ways, but it's, I think you have to find a good person to be with and then it works. But we couldn't know in advance. It was quite a bet, but we were lucky it worked. So
yeah, that's good to know. And then last question about, I guess, being a female climber. I think you mentioned that at the climbing gym, even at like the commercial climbing gym, I guess you said that you experience a lot of, I think you said like machismo with the climbing gym. I'm surprised that that's still something you experience as like a professional climber.
Yeah, it's true. It's a shame, but it still happens. I think it happens to every World Cup climbers for sure. Because the climbing is increasing a lot, so you also find people who are beginners and from other community in the gym. I think usually the real climbers who follow competitions, they know you, so they know that you are strong and they won't underestimate you. But sometimes I meet people at the gym who are not following competitions, so they don't know me, and they just see a woman which is climbing in a black boulder or red boulder, and if they don't know the level or the difficulty, they just think, okay, it's a woman, so if she can do it, I will try, and then they cannot start. It's quite funny to watch, but sometimes it's less funny when the people are coming to talk to you and to, I don't know, they give their opinions or their advice. But you didn't ask for anything, so just let me alone. Like, it's not cool. But for the rest, when I see a guy which is trying the same boulder as me just because I am a woman, I find it very funny because it's directly punished, you know. It just cannot start the boulder, so it's funny. But yeah, it still happens. Yeah, I think because a lot of people don't know climbing and start climbing. But yeah, it's also happened with real climbers, but I think it happens less.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of surprised that you have that experience because I don't think I see that too often. But I guess maybe I just don't try stuff that's hard enough, so I don't see it.
Well, maybe it's a question of culture. I don't know how it is in the US, but I think in Europe, the men are still considered like better than women's.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be like this, but I think it's still in the culture for it's changing. It's evolving a lot, but it's also still in the culture. Also in the work world, men are better paid than women. I think on a lot of examples, it's still like this. I don't know in the US, maybe it's about the culture, but it happens here.
No, I mean, I think in general, it would still be like that. I don't see it as much in a climbing gym because I think in climbing gyms, people are usually a little bit more, I guess, like accepting. There's not as much like toxic masculinity, I guess, but it depends on the gym as well, I think.
Yeah, it depends on everything about the city where you are. And yeah, for me, it happens because also I climb in very hard boulders, but I also see for weaker women that it happens, but in a different way. For example, like the man will feel obliged to give an advice, you know, but he will give advices to women, but not to men. And it can be really kind, like it looks kind and sometimes it's nice, but if it's only for women, it's kind of machismo.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, people always talk about beta spraying and it's really annoying, but I think for me, I will always take beta because I just want to know how to do it.
But imagine in the opposite way, if you want to climb outside, on site, and you don't want to have informations and you are climbing, you are on the wall, and then one guy is screaming, put the right hand like this and then this, and you're like, come on, I just want to climb by myself and don't tell anything. Yeah, I didn't ask anything.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, hopefully people will hear this and they'll know.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay, I know you have a cutoff soon, so we'll just move on for now. Future goals for the upcoming season. Do you have any like concrete goals that you want to hit?
Yeah, to go to the Olympics for sure.
Yeah. You're participating in OQS, so good luck to you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope it goes well. And
thank you.
Yeah, any other goals or just the Olympics?
For this year, I mainly focus on this because it's already a very big project, so I cannot think about something else for the moment. But yeah, for sure, after I have other projects. But for this year, it's mainly Olympics.
Okay. I mean, I guess you have to like train in order to peak for a certain competition. So is like this first World Cup kind of just like practice for you, or are you also trying to like peak here as well?
Yeah, the goal for the first China World Cups is to practice before the OQS. But I'm still a competitor, so for sure I want to be on the podium. I want to win, so I will give my best. But yeah, for example, if I don't complete these goals, it's okay. I just have to learn what happened and yeah, to take the advantage of these comps before the OQS.
Definitely. Okay. Well, good luck there. Real quick, let's move into a few Discord questions from the community. First one, are there any struggles on the national team with different languages being spoken?
No, it's okay. We speak in English.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I
mean, it's funny because we mix a bit of everything.
Yeah.
So we mainly speak English, then I would say French, and then just a bit of Flemish. But yeah, everyone is speaking French quite good. Even the Flemish climbers, for example, Hannes van Duysen is from the north part and he's speaking Flemish. But he learned French being in the team, actually. So yeah, now we speak French with him. And if he cannot speak or he cannot find his words or he doesn't understand us, we speak in English. And all the briefing from the coach are in English.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I'm surprised. I thought more people spoke French in Belgium than English. So that's interesting to know.
Yeah, we have three languages. So it's French, Dutch, and German. Dutch is Flemish. It's the same language. But yeah, because if we would speak in the three languages, the coach would do the briefing in three languages. It would take too much time, or so I just do it in English, and so everyone can understand.
Makes sense. Next question: what do you do in isolation to kill the time?
Usually, I climb quite early because it's the order of climbing is the ranking. So if I am well ranked, I will enter the ISO and I will warm up directly. So it's my warm up routine. I think last year I was waiting more because my previous year was bad in terms of results. So yeah, it depends. I like to talk to the to other climbers, the coaches. I like listening to music. Maybe this year I will read because I started to read more than the previous year again.
Okay. Because
when I was younger, I really liked reading, but then I stopped a bit. So now maybe I can take a book in the ISO. But yeah, in general, I just warm up directly, so I don't have a lot of things to do except to focus on my warm up.
And I guess speaking of music, people are also curious about what kind of music or bands you listen to.
I have a mix of everything, I would say, because I'm really sensitive to music according to my mood or the mood I want to have. So it can be really hard techno if I want to be nervously ready in a hard boulder, for example. But sometimes if I know that it's a slab and I need to be really relaxed or calm, I will listen to calm music. I also like some raps sometimes because it can be aggressive in the lyrics, and sometimes I need to be in this mood for competing. So yeah, it's a mix of everything, and I use it like a tool to have the mood that I really need for the next boulder, if I know which style is it.
Any specific songs that come to mind right now that you want to share?
I really like listening to techno when I am competing. So, for example, Charlotte DeWitt. It's a Belgian DJ.
Okay.
I'll try. She's to look mixing it up. Dance With Me. You okay. Have to tap it.
Okay.
Mandragora from Codeine.
Okay. These will be hard for me to look up, but I'll try to find them.
It's nice techno to climb. And yeah, for the rap, it's a mix of American rap or French rap, because the French are also very good in rap.
Yeah.
But yeah, Eminem, it's a good classic.
All right, sounds good. Well, yeah, I think we got to end soon. So I'll end it there. That's all the questions I had. And thank you for joining me today. Is there anything you want to shout out or let people know where they can find you?
No, you can find me on Instagram and on the World Cup streaming. But yeah, thank you for inviting me. It was a fun time. discussing about all of this.
Yeah, I'll link your info in the description. And then, it was great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed. Otherwise, you are a super fake climber. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, I'd appreciate if you rate it 5 stars, and you can continue the discussion on the free competition climbing Discord linked in the description. Thanks again for listening.